Farm Bureau.
There's no farmers in except for.
I'm opening a meeting of the House Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee on Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. Members, thanks for accommodating Chair Lively's committee and the exciting paid family leave hearing that was just wrapped up. If some of you didn't get the word that we're starting at 3:15, I apologize, especially after our eagerness to get everybody here on time. So promise you next Tuesday we will start at 3:00.
3:30?
No. I think this works. It's 3:15.
About that bill you wanted to, Gary.
Dad.
Anyway, the first item on our agenda today is a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2864, the Cultural Competency Process Bill. I've gotten word that the bill is not quite ready to go. There's some late-breaking news on that. So we're going to carry that over, House Bill 2864, to the next meeting for public hearing and work session. So be ready to go to town on that. We do have one other bill scheduled for work session, and it's our own Rep. Johnson's data bill. And so I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2147. Laura, if you'd please provide the committee with a brief summary of the bill.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2147 would require each post-secondary institution of education to annually provide Department of Education and Higher Education Coordinating Commission with number of high school graduates from each school district enrolled at the institution and the graduation rate at institution for Oregon high school graduates from each school district. There is a -1 amendment, members. It requires the Department of Education to annually provide this information to each school district. The bill has minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and no subsequent committee referral.
Mr. Chair.
Pardon me. Rep. Johnson, were you going to say anything additional on this?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Yes, the amendment just makes some clarifying language in there. One other point I need to make is that I had a conversation with the HEC earlier today, and Section 1 calls for both the Department of Ed and the HEC to provide this requires the institution to provide this information to both DOE and the HEC. That's probably redundant. So what I'm going to do is if we can pass this bill out, I'll carry it over to our chair of Senate Ed and just simplify that. It should just simply be the HEC. So we have one institution that has to categorize this information.
Okay. Normally, I'm not keen on carrying things over to our Senate friends to finish our work for us, but this seems so incidental that I'd be comfortable doing that. Vice Chair Whitnett, would you?
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendment dated 3/15/2017 to House Bill 2147.
Great. Thank you. Rep. Whitnett moves to adopt the -1 amendment dated 3/15/2017. Any discussion? Okay. If there is none, no objections. The amendment is adopted. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2147 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Rep. Whitnett moves House Bill 2147 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on that?
I was just going to say that I'm excited that this is coming forth and appreciate the opportunity to vote on this.
Okay, great. Well, we appreciate your excitement.
Thank you.
We do exciting things here.
I just want to point it out when it happens.
Back I was sure she had a question, buddy.
any further discussion? These late starts just really get people wired up. Okay, if the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative
Biden? Aye.
Representative
Sun?
Aye.
Representative
Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Reschke?
Aye.
Representative Solomon?
Aye.
Representative Leone?
Aye.
Vice
Hi. Rep. Johnson, would you like to carry that?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And the motion passes. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2147. And
such harmony.
Opening an informational hearing on the University of Oregon's Knight Campus for Accelerated Scientific Impact. So we have a panel of Dr. Patrick Phillips, Dr. Karen, probably pronouncing it incorrectly, Gulman, and Michelle. Go with that.
Chair Reardon, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Patrick Phillips, and I'm a professor of biology at the University of Oregon. I'm also the acting executive director of the new science campus at the University of Oregon.
And for the record, I'm Karen Gilliman, a professor of biology at the University of Oregon.
Great. Good to have you here.
And for the record, my name is Michelle Sconce, and I am a graduate student at the University of Oregon.
So we are very happy to be here today to tell you about this great new program that we have going at the University of Oregon. It seems like we've reached you at a happy moment for your interaction, so hopefully we want to keep that positive energy going. And I hope you'll put up with us. We, as professors, we have an overhead presentation, so I'll be talking to some of the points that we're doing. So the most important point is that we have a new campus for accelerating scientific impact. It's a new $1 billion project that we're starting. Let's see if we can get it going. There we go. And this is a new outward-facing project at the University of Oregon that's really geared towards taking the fundamental discoveries that we're making and we have made over many decades at the University of Oregon and thinking how we can accelerate their advancement into basically discoveries that can lead to entrepreneurial activity and just general impacts on human health and societal well-being. The big point here is that we're trying to create both a physical and intellectual infrastructure in the South Willamette Valley, but also that leverages the entire state that enhances both research and development. And here we really want to emphasize the development part. We've always been excellent at research, but we have a new opportunity now to really strengthen our development impact in terms of what we're doing. What we have found is we have two gaps that we need to fill. One is when we make discoveries, how do we get those out into both the marketplace and other kinds of impacts? And then the other one is a gap in terms of how do we get businesses that are created within the state, especially in this tech era, to actually stay in Oregon. And so that's really the mission that we're addressing at both of those aspects. So the actual infrastructure, and we're here really to talk to you about this capital request that we'll be moving forward this session. And the intent is to build two new 750,000 square foot buildings. They're right next to, if you know Eugene, on the north side of Franklin Boulevard, right across from our main science campus. We're going to equip them with state-of-the-art equipment and facilities, and we're going to create spaces, and this is actually somewhat unusual on a national scale, right within the science complex for companies to spin out from research activity at the university, but also provide an opportunity for companies to spin in who want access to our new facilities, but also access to our students. And so we really view this as a major workforce development and student training opportunity that I think is unprecedented for us.
Let me interrupt just for a second. Are you comfortable with questions as we go along?
I would be overjoyed to answer any questions, Chairman.
Would you be partnering then with existing companies to work on problems that they have and help get their products to market? And I'm thinking of an innovation center I visited in Alberta, Canada, where they worked with customers, General Electric, working with their customers, and they were doing very innovative work. Would that be part of the model, or is it just?
Yes, Chair Reardon. Part of the limit that we see, and Dr. Gilliman will talk to this in a bit, is really having this entrepreneurial mentorship environment, exactly as you discussed. Mm-hmm. So it's been a big limitation for faculty at the University of Oregon, but I think it's at a statewide level. But then also to provide those opportunities for local businesses. You know, giant conglomerates might already know what they're doing, but I think these public-private partnerships is a big part of, I think, where many of us see a lot of future development moving, and especially encouraging our students to become involved in those kinds of activities so that they can be prepared both to move with those companies, and then the ideal situation is when you have students already engaged with companies, and so when they finish up, they're ready to move right in to that environment.
Okay.
So what's the benefit to Oregon? We think that there are extreme benefits here. We provide a statewide benefit just in terms of creating a regional innovation hub. It's going to be home for these expanded U of O activities. But when we really think about the entire state, I think we need to ask ourselves, you know, where do we want to be as a state 10, 20, 30 years from now in terms of the high wage, high impact jobs that we know are part of the emerging economy? We have, I hate to use the word competitors, but we're in a regional landscape to the north and to the south with Seattle and the Bay Area. And so we really need to be gearing up a statewide solution. And so we're pairing with our sister institutions in the state to begin these conversations. But this activity really gives us a chance to build our national reputation, to attract new kinds of scientists, and to support the students of Oregon in new new ways that haven't really been available before. And as a public institution and a public research university, we really take that mandate seriously. So overall, as I mentioned, we're really looking at how our activities are going to strengthen the University of Oregon, how they're going to create new opportunities for business and entrepreneurship, how they enhance training opportunities for our students. But this is really a regional scale opportunity in terms of looking at how the other institutions can partner with us. We're organizing a research summit with OHSU April 18th to really start exploring these ideas of where our commonalities are, where we can really think about moving this forward. I visited OSU and PSU already to start having those conversations. And as I said, you know, one of our big goals is really to how can we get companies spun out, but then get them to stay in Oregon. And that's really a question of building the proper full ecosystem. It's not a question that any university can solve by themselves. It's really a partnership between business, the state, and the universities. And so this is a great starting place for us for that. And, of course, the sustained activities of all the work that we do are going to have a large economic impact, both directly in terms of the employment opportunities, but, of course, they have state revenue implications as well. And I think growing revenue is good for all public institutions.
You know, we're looking a long ways out, but do you have projections on things like that at this point? Or is it just,
I do, and I'll get to that. Actually, I can just move right to that. So we have two scales of projection here, actually three if we want to think about it. So during construction, this is a $200 million capital project. We're bringing $100 million to the table, and we're asking the state to partner with us for $100 million in obligation bonds. And so the immediate impact is large. So it's $176 million in total economic output, 1,300 jobs. And the per year annual impact just in terms of tax revenue is $11 million. So this is really a project that starts paying for itself immediately. We're looking to break ground this fall. I'm already meeting with the architects. We're designing the project. So this is something that can happen very quickly.
And we have another question here.
Yes.
I'm on Julian.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. If you go back to the prior slide, please. So I think the one with the other institutions.
One more, yes. I skipped over
Thank
one.
Thank you.
Yep.
So that was going to be my question. How are the other institutions in our state, what are their thoughts around you becoming another research center or increased research institution? Because OSU does a lot of science-related fields already. And obviously, there's competition amongst our institutions, but I love the concept of partnership because as we are working on credit transfer, we want to make sure that any of our students who are going to be attending any of the institutions, that the credit transfer is easy. It doesn't get complicated. So the fact that you're already talking to other institutions in this area, I think, is brilliant. That you're leveraging a partnership, and I think that's great. So that was going to be my question: what are the thoughts of the other institutions, and how are they also excited about this project?
Mm-hmm. So Chair Reardon and Vice Chair Alonso Leon. They're very excited, actually. I know that you characterize this in terms of competition, but and there's, of course, there's a reality to that. I think we attribute a lot more competition to the athletic field than actually exists on the academic side. There's a couple of elements. One is actually the University of Oregon has always been historically very strong in the sciences, but we're in the fundamental sciences. We don't have an engineering school, which is part of the reason why our sisters at OSU get some recognition. And, of course, they have forestry and ag and all these other kinds of direct impact things. And that is partially what we're addressing here, not in a competitive way, but to increase the landscape at the University of Oregon, which will enhance students everywhere. So that's the direct response. And then in terms of partnership, President Joe Robertson of OHSU was part of, he actually introduced Mike Schill at the announcement for this. I've been in many conversations. Dan Dorsa, who's the Vice President for Research, and I are coordinating this research summit. I've visited OSU and with some trepidation about how their response would be, and they're very enthusiastic because I think everyone in the state recognizes that we need to elevate the entire state and we need to create a much stronger ecosystem, and there's no way that any one of us can do it. When I've traveled around the countries, the next phase that we're a little behind on is not just how each university can be strong, but how consortia of universities are strong. When you go to the Bay Area, it's not just Berkeley. It's Berkeley in partnership with Stanford and UC San Francisco. Or if you go to Boston, another major hub, it's Harvard and MIT and the hospitals there forming together. And I really think that's the future for Oregon and moving into this area. And I think everybody at all these institutions recognize that, and so we want to work together. And also, specifically on the Capitol, you know, we are supporting the Capitol request as it's gone through for all the institutions. We're not asking for a special exception or to be put at the top of the list or anything like that. We are really supporting the existing efforts that are agreed to, and we've made a commitment to that. What we see is that this is an extraordinary opportunity. It's really a generational opportunity because of the investment, and we need to get our project started. We need to build the infrastructure of the Capitol, so as we build on this over the next decade, we'll actually have the space to do that and to create these opportunities.
Okay. Rep. Solomon, you still have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Apologize, you're coming on to probably a committee here where a lot of freshmen are involved, too, so I have a lot of questions. I'm doing some research. I appreciate this opportunity. I've been working 19 years for an educational software company, and really am excited about this. When you're talking about science standards that we're bringing on to our younger schools and getting kids excited about science, excites me. So I wanted to ask a couple of questions when you were talking about partnerships, and you were talking about the idea that you have a lot of folks that are buying into this. So when you mentioned spin-in companies, mm-hmm. I was curious if you could tell me how much money that you perhaps have invested from those companies, like people that have expressed interest, have they invested in this program? If they haven't, I wrote down here, it just seems like a natural partnership for established and emerging companies and organizations to come into this. So, I was curious about that, if you have any information on that, if anybody has piqued interest in joining this.
Chair Reardon and Representative Holman, we are very early in the stages here, so we're really looking at breaking ground in the fall and then having the buildings in the beginning of 2020. So it's a little premature to already have partnerships set up in terms of companies that are going to join us, because we have to be, if you pardon the pun, a little more concrete about exactly what the spaces are going to look like. Also, we cannot realistically make commitments on spaces that will be available until we have a good idea of the capital capacity that we have, because if we are not able to partner with the state, then the scale of the project is 50%, and we'll really have to focus strongly on the research support and maybe less on the student training aspects.
Okay, follow up. So you're saying there's currently no partnership, nobody that has gotten on, has been explored with this, that you're seeking through the state? Is that correct?
Chair Reardon, Representative Solomon, I don't know exactly how to characterize that. So we have a history of partnerships at the University of Oregon, for instance, Sony and other companies that have spun in to our existing research facilities, especially a facility that's known as CAMCORE, which is a high-end materials characterization as our strength there. But we haven't specified exactly what our capacity is going to be in these buildings, and so we actually haven't sought that interaction yet. What we have heard is that everybody's very enthusiastic about it, but it's really premature for us to start negotiating exactly what that's going to look like. And also our initial focus is really to create this environment where we can nurture the efforts that are going on here, and then we'll see what happens in terms of people moving in. But I think we all appreciate that the tech industry moves so quickly that companies anticipating where they're going to be 3 years from now in terms of accessing the new facilities is still a little bit early, I would say.
Sure. You had mentioned on one of your slides, oh, right there. Keeps Oregon discoveries and talent in Oregon. I was wondering, do you have statistics to show like a ratio of Oregon students compared to out-of-state and international students for your for this particular school? Or can you provide
Chair Reardon and Representative Solomon, I don't have those statistics. There's two aspects of discoveries and talent that we're talking about. One is just the entrepreneurial, and we have many anecdotal cases where it's basically a facilities limitation issue where companies that spin out have no place to go, and they move to the Bay Area. I don't have any specific statistics on that. Again, we don't have any students because this doesn't exist yet.
No, I'm talking about the college. If you're looking at the university, if you're talking about the university as a whole, if you
sure, we definitely, I don't have those on the tip of my tongue, but we have all, and we'd be happy to supply those with you in terms of what our distribution of student coverage is.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Proceed.
Please.
All right. So an important aspect of this work is it's really an add. We anticipate that it's going to, at a minimum, expand our research capacity by about 30%. So overall, when fully operational, this is just the direct sort of investment of the funds to keep the operation going. It's a $79 million. This would include grant funds that would come through. $79 million in total economic output per year, 750 jobs, $7 million in annual state local revenue. So it's really a project that pays for itself. This does not include, getting to the previous comments, any spin out or other economic activities that are built by businesses that would be associated. This was a study done by Eco Northwest, and to their credit, they were not willing to speculate on exactly sort of what business activities may or may not develop from this. So this is just in terms of the overall investment. And here the important point is that most of this is funded through endowment. We're actually trying to create a completely sustainable activity. And so this is a return that's in perpetuity. That has a couple of implications. One is that we are not shifting resources from existing university operations to pay for this. This is just an added-on element, and due to the nature of the gift that we have, it's actually possible. So we're creating all new opportunities for our students in research capacity without drawing on our existing funds. And I'm sure we're all aware, especially this committee, of the pressure that is on our students for tuition dollars. So there's no tuition, net tuition load that's generated by this expansion of the university. It's not funded at all by tuition.
We were hoping you'd help reduce the tuition rate.
10.6.
I wish I could. Unfortunately, that is not my that's not my capacity or my role today. So I've already gone over these things. I guess we've already talked about the $200 million project. And over time, it's the overall vision here is $1 billion. So if you look at it from a return on the investment, it's a 10-to-1 return on the capital request that we're making. So it's actually sort of unprecedented, I think, within the state, the level of investment that we're talking about here.
So you say the UO investment, is that UO endowment-type investments, or what's their $100 million?
So our $100 million is direct investment in the capital construction. So the overall capital construction.
But where does that come from?
That comes from the gift.
Okay.
Yes. So this is, bricks and mortar kinds of discussion as well as programmatic. But I think it doesn't really come to life until you get to hear a little bit about what we're actually talking about. And so I really enjoy turning it over to my colleague, Karen Gilliman, so that she can talk a little bit about her research and partly how we're motivated to address these issues.
Yes. Chairman, thank you for this opportunity to tell you about our vision for this this campus. And I had the opportunity to be one of the faculty members who was involved in helping conceive of this project. And it was an extraordinary opportunity for me to think about really, how we could be transforming research in the state. My own research as a faculty member in the biology department deals with understanding how the microorganisms, the bacteria that we have in our bodies, promote our normal health and well-being. And I do this kind of research on a very basic level. And it's just an exciting, fascinating place to be. And so I'm working in this basic discovery inquiry. But what's exciting also is to realize that when I make discoveries in my research group with colleagues like my graduate student, Michelle, that there are implications of this work that could really benefit society. And so one example of that, and you'll get to see a little video that describes this recent discovery from our research group, is a finding that some of these specific gut bacteria that we have can actually promote normal metabolism by promoting the production of cells in our pancreas that make insulin. And this is a really important hormone in our body that regulates the glucose levels in our circulating through our body. And it was a very new discovery to realize that gut bacteria could actually be impacting this metabolism of insulin, and has very exciting implications because there are very serious diseases that afflict our society, and diabetes, which is a disease where there's an imbalance of insulin. And so finding a new way that we could potentially promote the production and balance of insulin in the body has really exciting implications for therapy for diabetes. that's beyond my scope of expertise. And what I'm really excited about in this new campus is to be able to partner with colleagues who would be working more familiar with ways to take those kinds of basic discoveries and translate those into spinning out companies that could develop new therapeutics, partnering with clinicians who would be able to really take those to clinical trials. And so we see, this opportunity to really move from the basic discoveries of inquiry and insight into innovation and ultimately impact into society. And by working more closely with those kinds of colleagues in this kind of collaborative campus, we see how then their insights would inform the kind of basic investigations that we make. And so that's why we see this sort of really accelerating this impact cycle. If we're working more closely, and seeing where our attention can focus, and then seeing how our discoveries can be more rapidly realized. So I think maybe it would be useful to give a specific example in this video.
All right.
I think the way I remember it is that Karen and I literally sat down for coffee to talk about what I wanted to do my thesis on.
Well, it was a series of conversations.
I sort of had this idea kind of sitting in the back of my head, and so we just asked a very basic question
about developmental biology.
Whether or not bacteria may or may not influence the development of the pancreas and pancreatic beta cells.
The answer could have been yes or it could have been no, and the answer was yes, that there was an impact on development. And then that immediately provoked the next question.
Can we influence the development of those pancreatic
insulin-producing
beta cells? So, and we found that we could.
We just kept on following this lead when we learned that there were specific bacteria that could do this. And then Jennifer asked, well, are they secreting anything that could do this?
And so to kind of get at that question, we used the very simple tools that we have available in the lab, which is the zebrafish model organism.
Then she started, just drilling down into asking, well, what is this material?
Identity of this product.
And so that gave us a clue that this is likely to be a secreted protein involved.
And so then we had a list of possible candidates.
It was about 165 proteins.
The genome, 163. We narrowed that huge list down to one possible candidate.
When she told me this, I was entirely skeptical. I was like, there's no way that this could, have worked out this well.
We named it beta cell expansion factor A, or BEF-A.
Hey, Beth. It was just a remarkable day when she put that on sterile germ-free fish, and all of a sudden, beta cells just exploded. It was so crystal clear from that image that this was a big deal.
Not because we're curing diabetes or anything like that.
But this protein has the potential for being developed into a therapeutic for type 1 diabetes.
If this can help people, we want it to help people.
Realizing its therapeutic potential.
For the first time, we're showing that a protein produced by a bacteria is actually capable of acting on this very important and essential cell population of the pancreas, the beta cells.
So I'd like to turn over to my graduate student, Michelle, who's actually continuing this project about this protein.
Yes, thank you.
Thank
you for being here, representatives and Chair Reardon. I am a second-year graduate student at the University of Oregon, and I'm working on this project. So as Karen said, and through the video, right, we're showing that the microbiota within our gut is... Yes.
I need to ask you to go ahead and say your name again.
Oh.
You may have said it earlier, but let's
just
go ahead.
Michelle Sconce.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. What this work is showing for the, one of the first times is that our gut microbiota actually influence development, and specifically within the zebrafish. The U of O Science Complex is just a wonderful opportunity to help accelerate the questions I have about this process. And specifically, I'm trying to understand, how does this protein, BEF-A, actually cause the beta cells to expand? Does it actually get through the intestine to the pancreas, or does it get into the bloodstream? And with this U of O Science Complex, I'm going to have access to a lot of other resources that's really going to not only train me well as a scientist in Oregon, but also help me answer my questions and look at the question through lots of different lenses. And on top of that, I'd also like to note that, you know, this is a really wonderful opportunity for us as a state. I've lived in Oregon my whole life, and I think this is a wonderful opportunity to show that as a state, you know, we value science, but also gender equality. I serve on the Office of Women of Graduate Sciences, and our mission strives to create gender equality in the sciences and in all fields of science by giving professional opportunities for women. So not only would this complex really help women have wonderful training within all fields of science, but also it's our priority to ensure in my WGS group that the faculty that get hired within this new science complex are diverse and there is equivalent women holding these positions. But on top of that, I'd also like to speak as an Oregonian. I'm a fourth-generation Oregonian. I grew up in the small rural town of Veneta. My great-grandparents actually, they were farmers, and they established farms, dairy farm in particular, that's still here to this day. My grandfather was a logger in Oregon for 40 years. My parents born and raised. And I have two older sisters who also went to college in Oregon schools and actually have come back. My middle sister, she went to OSU for engineering. She now works in the city of Eugene as an engineer. And my oldest sister actually did her practicum in the same kindergarten class that we all went to with the same teacher and actually has that position now when that kindergarten teacher retired. So from an Oregonian standpoint, I'm really excited about this U of O Science Complex because I think it's going to build our state. And for me in particular, I have been trained for what will be over 11 years as a scientist in Oregon. And I want to keep that training here because this is my home and this is where I want to be. And right now, with the job market for well-trained scientists, you know, it's, you know, go to San Francisco or, you know, go to the East Coast or go to Washington, which is fine. But I want to be here. And use my training here and give back to the community that helped me grow not only as a person, but as a scientist.
Thanks, Michelle. So
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I think the committee would like to keep you here as well. So we have questions. What city did you say you were from, or what town?
I grew up in Veneta, Chair Reardon.
Thank you. Thank you.
But your family?
My mom's side of the family is from Veerbort, Oregon, which is outside of Forest Grove. And I went to Pacific University, so that was pretty fun. And then my father's side of the family is from Roseburg, Glide area.
So, Chair Reardon, with your permission, I can wrap up. But if you have questions,
any questions? Just a couple of questions you want now, or
why don't
I just ask you?
Why don't I wrap up and then?
Okay, go ahead.
Whichever you prefer.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to emphasize that we know that asking the state, especially now, for to partner with us for $100 million in bonding authority is significant. It's we don't take this request lightly. We recognize that this is a difficult time, but it's also an unprecedented opportunity. We really have only one chance to do this in this generational size of an effort. We need to build the infrastructure so that as we build on this over the next 10 years, we actually have the capacity to achieve all the goals, both the training goals and the business entrepreneurship goals. And it's we really can't do that later. We have to make that investment now, which is why we're coming to you. So we really think that this is an opportunity to capitalize on, you know, our extraordinary skill and aptitude. We just heard a lot about that. We want more of that. We want to provide these opportunities for our students. we can really deepen our roots and our reputation as a state that is innovative and supports science and the translation of science into societal impacts. And really, it's just an opportunity for us to seize this moment and to use this as a launching point for a statewide conversations to renew our bonds across the state and a different kind of bond, and to really emphasize what this new economy could look like so that we can retain people like Michelle, attract new businesses, and really create a new economy that's supportive of what the citizens view and also supportive of the revenue needs, for sure, that we all know. So thank you.
Okay, questions?
I haven't been up there myself for a while, but around the University of Washington, there's sort of an innovation district that has formed. And what makes that so successful, I'm told, is that it's the proximity of these different companies, organizations that work around a university. So a question is there space around where this will be located for other organizations to build and thrive along with you?
Yes, Chair Reardon, thank you for that question. That's partially why this is so exciting. There is this need for the next level of how you spin out and then support a company sort of in their mid-career. It's this valley of death. We do have a research park that's directly adjacent to where this new building will be built. So it's essentially kitty corner, just one block away is the start of that. So we do think that this is a great leverage point for that kind of activity in the South Willamette Valley.
Okay. Well, you did, Rep. Johnson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. Appreciate it to all of you for your great report. Just to clarify, maybe you've touched on this already, but you are already pushing forward with the planning and design for the complex, correct?
That's correct.
So will the actual construction be dependent upon the state moving forward with the bond match, or will you go ahead and proceed and you're going to keep moving forward with that process and hope that there will be some supporting funds to help you in your work?
So, Chair Reardon and Representative Johnson, thank you for that question. We're going to build something because we have to. Mm-hmm. We're completely out of research support space at the University of Oregon. We have no more labs to hire anyone, and so we need to hire these new scientists to help get this started. It's really a question of scale and scope. So when I say that we're planning, we're in what's called the conceptual planning phase, where the architects talk to us about our hopes and dreams and what it could look like. The schematic planning won't happen until we know what we can actually do. And so we're not prepared to go into details because we haven't made the analysis if we don't get the support. We're planning, anticipating we're going to do the entire project. What I would guess is going to happen is that if we can only build half as much, the innovative aspects of this in terms of creating the entrepreneurial spaces, I didn't have a chance to really talk about the innovative training opportunities and graduate programs that we're supporting through this new initiative. So that would be my guess, because we simply cannot hire faculty until we build the central research infrastructure. But whether or not we'll be able to build the same core facilities that will support spin-in companies and all of that sort of stuff remains to be seen. But that's really what's at risk here, is building the infrastructure so that we can do all of that.
And then just one follow-up, if I could.
Oh, please.
And I think you touched on this as well, but the intent is that the gift plus the state support will fund the construction as well as the sustainability of the funding required for the personnel that are going to be in the complex, right? It's not going to add to your budget baseload line requirements that would be funded via tuition.
Chair Reardon and Representative Johnson, yes, I really am happy that you're asking that question to reemphasize that point. There's no additional base load made by this 30% increase in research capacity at the University of Oregon. The capital request is for construction, and those dollars will be used for construction so that you get the multipliers on actual job creation and all of that. The contribution from the university is another $100 million in capital construction. construction. The remainder, after, you know, there's other expenses that we have, will be invested in endowment funds so that all the operations that as we move forward will be self-funded. And so we're talking about all the faculty that are hired. And again, this is extraordinary. I should really emphasize that no public university has done anything like this before. It's an opportunity in Oregon that every other state in the country would be incredibly envious of. So we really want to figure out how to capitalize on this. And from the standpoint of this committee, in terms of education, it's really going to create this new, at no cost to the students, a new set of ways of being trained and educated, and research opportunities that I think are unprecedented. And it's really a great opportunity for the state at many different levels.
Rip Solomon.
Thanks, Chair. So I am so excited when I see such passion in students and they're talking about science, and to see all this, you know, we are in an area where we are completely rich in innovation, and we need to be able to invest in that and see that through. You touched on a couple points when you talk about scale, and in response to Representative Johnson, you talked about scale and scope. And so again, I would say that this project seems like such an amazing opportunity for private investments. And I was a little taken back that private investment hasn't been sought yet. You have one donor, and you're asking for state support. So we don't have a private outreach yet. So when you talk about scale and scope, I'm curious as to how do you justify what the center will look like for the money that you receive? So I know that I've seen some statistics on what, say, a college laboratory costs in compared to what is projected to be for this facility, somewhere in the range of like $300 compared to like $1,400 per square foot. So when you talk about scale and scope, how do we, you know, when you're looking at for state investments, that's where I'm curious about. Because this is times that we're looking at a budget, and we've had a lot of conversations about organizations that come forward and say, you know, we need these investments. And we don't disagree that investments in education aren't incredibly important. But when you look at opportunities where this may be an opportunity for real private investment to come in, because it is a investment in our state, I'm surprised that that hasn't been sought. But I'm wondering about the scale and scope part where you talked about.
Chairman Reardon and Representative Solomon, I think that I don't want to overstep my capacity to address that question at this moment. We're very pleased to be able to come and start this conversation with you to give it. As we move along through the session, then we'll be working to give a more precise analysis of what those impacts might look like, and so that we'd be happy to get back to you on that. The private investment question is an interesting one. The model that you're suggesting sounds terrific, but it's not historically that kind of private investment that's beyond gifts. It's not usually something that universities see as directly. So we'll. I can't speak to that directly either, but we definitely have our corporate sponsorship group that works on those things.
Right. One last question.
Yeah, just follow up with that. I mean, I just do think it's something that we should be looking at. We talk about K-12 investments and having businesses really invest and look in our career in college, you know, partnerships, and this just to me seems like an opportunity. Where you're having real, you know, workforce potential. So that's where I'm, good. That's, I guess, my answer.
Chairman Reardon, can I respond to that? So that is a great comment, and it makes me think. So that is actually where we have our corporate investments.
Okay.
So this new campus is home to our graduate internship program. And so maybe it's a little more micro scale than you're thinking, but We currently bring in about 100 students a year, train them on campus, and then immediately send them out into internships into companies. And so, and the companies are supporting their internships. So these are long-term relationships that we have with companies and industry that directly place our students there. And part of the idea here is to greatly expand those kinds of experiential opportunities. And that's more directly related to the workforce development initiatives, I think, because it's very personal for each student. And our placement rate is above 95% in terms of having students get jobs through that activity.
Rep. Alonzo, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Actually, Rep. Solomon asked the question because I did want to expand on the partnership concept. So thank you for addressing that question, wanting to know, where else are you looking for funding, you know, other than the state and then the sounds like U of O's investing in it. But you kind of answered that question already. And I wanted to ask, you know, from a student's perspective, I wanted to hear what kind of responses you received. And I'm sure you guys do this. You consult with the students and say, we're potentially going to be building this new infrastructure, this new, you know, building, this new facility that you will benefit from. What kind of feedback did you guys get from students? And were students saying, well, actually, we want this other facility that we've been wanting for a while, and, you know, you are going to build this other building? I just want to hear from the students' perspective and what kind of outreach you did to talk to students.
Well, we have a student here, Chairman Reardon, we've heard nothing but positive impacts. I don't know if you're talking about undergraduate students. It's difficult, I think, to know exactly how their response is to a project that's going to be 3 years out. I think one thing that we know about our undergraduates and that we do extremely well is to provide these research opportunities, and students are very hungry for that. And so expanding our research capacity, having more labs, having hundreds more students be able to participate in research directly is a great opportunity. In terms of the more direct involvement, as we're going through this conceptual planning, we are we're just about to start this phase where we will be involving students in discussions about how the building functions, how it works, talking to people like Michelle about at the graduate level, but also the public spaces and what works for them. I have not heard discussion, and it may be outside my purview, about students feeling that one thing should be prioritized over another. I will say that we do have a request for a classroom building as part of our normal capital request. That's our number one priority. And so that's a very student-oriented, responsive to crowding issues. And so, so far, we have not viewed this or positioned it as an either-or kind of choice in terms of student impacts.
Thank you.
Well, I think that pretty well wraps it up. So thank you for a very informational meeting. I think it's a project that we're all extremely interested in. It's a little challenge financially here at this time. It's probably our only limiting factor. But thank you for coming in and sharing this with us. And good luck to you on your next steps of this effort. So. Thank you.
Thank you.
We thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oops. I think we're adjourning. If it's all right. I am closing the informational hearing, and I am closing a meeting of the House Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee.
Come on, don't tell me that.
Gift of time.
Come on, don't tell me that.
Gift of time.